Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
We are running to the center of the field and standing on the star at Cowboys Stadium right now.
It's the Terrell Owens 81 edition.
Which means everybody's going to like the potential and the talent of this episode, but in the end, they're going to decide too much trouble.
Too much trouble. No one can live with us.
Nope.
No one can be around us. They love our potential, but they cannot be around us.
The good news is that this podcast will be over soon, right? I mean,
it's
no more than
quick.
An hour. And
yeah.
So, and maybe a lot less than that even. And so, you know, then you can just move on, sign another receiver in free agency.
Yes.
Again, we apologize for the sports references to people who don't get that, but that was a sports reference, and now we'll move on. Hey, television is a thing. We should talk about it.
We could do that. You know what? I'm going to brush up on I watch a lot of soccer, so I'm going to brush up on that for our international fans.
All right.
Leicester, big
Leicester
story
City.
Out of Leicester. Yeah.
That was huge. So now we just turned off the people who don't care about sports at all. But
they're
the Brits have perked up now. Yes,
yeah.
Leicester City. A surprise. What a Cinderella kind of story. And once again, my Arsenal just kind of scuffles and finishes third, you know, always in the top four, almost never in the top one, but that's Arsenal for you. So I knew what I was getting into.
And to keep the theme of that, someone's going to relegate this podcast.
This episode.
We talk about television.
This episode may be relegated. So, I got a lot of letters, only some of which I fact checked. You had two reviews that you posted this week that I thought we should talk about. So one is, I suppose one of them has a French flavor and the other an English flavor. Is that fair to say?
That is fair. Uh-huh.
So Marseille, we want a little French action. I guess you could get it here, although your review was not particularly sterling.
No, it was not. And I believe I think it's Marseille rather than Marseille, isn't it?
Isn't it? I don't know.
I'm the person who didn't say Mallorca last. Yeah. Hello, France.
Marseille, as we say in America. Marseille, as they probably say.
I'm going to go with Marseille.
You know, there are all those French place names in Missouri that are right on the Mississippi River there that are all like for sales, that they're all like French names that have been completely anglicized.
Obliterated.
Painful.
Obliterated by
Marseilles.
Okay.
Marseille.
Mm-hmm.
With everybody's pal Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah, as I noted in the review, his latter body of work is a little bit spotty.
A little shaky.
He's made some interesting decisions in his life, especially of late. I thought he was maybe a Russian citizen still, but maybe not. I don't know. It was fun to review it in the sense of like, okay, I know what Netflix is doing here. This is their first fully French production. They didn't screen it for U.S. critics. And if I asked, as a matter of fact, and they sent me a thing saying, we only care about international audience, so it's not available for critics. And I thought,
wow.
Oh, okay, I'll watch it the day it comes out then. And so I did. And they didn't really cater to us. But it's funny that they didn't because, you know, Depardieu is a very notable actor. There's some pretty strong French actors and actresses in this. It's sexy. It's got violence. You would think it's everything that Americans would want to watch because it actually seems very much like an American show. Unfortunately, it's a very like mid-level, mediocre show. So it's like one of our. I said, you know, it's like CSI New York with you know like more. You know, more nakedness and French accents.
Interesting. I this goes back to our joke about releasing simultaneously worldwide, but it's true. Mm-hmm. Like they are, you know, not everything Netflix programs is for, you know, is for every country and every audience, but they do have that reach where anybody who's French or speaks French and is somewhere else in the world has a French show. So I wonder what their strategy is there, or if it just sort of happened that they, you know, there was some interesting chain of events that led to them producing this show. But it's fascinating that they would do something like this. And I guess it shows how international Netflix really is as a service now.
Yeah, I think the thing with them is that it adds to their content. A part of me, as I was looking at this show, because it's totally kind of random. It's, you know, like I said, it feels American. It's French, but it feels American. And then it's got this really oppressive score to it. The music is just, as I wrote in my review, it's annoying at first, and then it becomes kind of funny because it's like, it's almost like a spoof. And then it hit me that it's like very much like it's like a Spanish telenovela. Like every scene ends with dun 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 dun, and then they cut to Depardieu, and he's like, and I was like, oh my god, like what is this thing? It's like I hear all French accents. It looks like a cheap American mid-level show, and then it's dun 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 dun, whoa 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 whoa. The music's crazy, and I was like, at one point, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me! Somebody's just—they're just dicking around with us right now because the strings and the dun 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 was like so transparently ridiculous. I was like, "Are you winking at me, score person, musical supervisor? Are you winking at me?" But I will say this: at one point, I thought, "Did Netflix like allow this to kind of be dumbed down so that like no matter if you're in China or if you're you're in Caracas, everything's gonna like make sense plot wise and like it seems familiar enough to make you interested in it. Doesn't seem like overtly French. I don't know, it seemed like it was something that was, and look, it's not as bad as Marco Polo, which is their other international effort, and not nearly as bad, but it's just not very good. And what I pointed out in the review is that the Sundance has a miniseries right now called The Last Panthers. We've talked about it before. Yep. Here that, and that's also takes a good portion of that takes place in Marseille, and also in the same idea of it being that that there's a gun problem, there's drugs and violence in the ghettos, and it's like it's this tough part of France. That's still in there. It's just done so much better in The Last Panthers that I would steer people towards that on Sundance.
Yeah, I wonder if the side effect of this being a Netflix production is that it was an attempt to, by the people who are French, who are presumably producing it, to make an American show, or they got that in their head that like, well, this is for this American company, and so we're going to make it more American. And we don't see necessarily all of this in the U.S., but I know from talking to my friends who live in other countries that, you know, a lot of local broadcasters try to make American-style shows, but in most cases, you know, they don't have the expertise because they don't have the huge pool of people who've been cranking out this stuff in the U.S. over the years, and they don't necessarily have the budgets. And so you end up with something that, you know, is fine, but to an American eye, you know, the advantage of it in those markets is it's, and I'm really trying to, I don't mean this to say like an ugly American, we know how to make the TV, everybody else lay off. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is like, a lot of countries will be like, let's make a show that's like an American show, but it's about us. And right. And it could potentially even be a big hit because it's like, we took all those things you like about those American shows you keep watching. We want you to watch our shows instead. So we made this show in France or Spain or the UK or Australia or wherever, and we made it like the Americans make, except it's set here. Isn't that great? And I think some of those shows become successful. I think re-importing them back into America, you end up with the Americans going like, what am I seeing here? Because like the reason I would watch the international show is to make it feel international, but this doesn't feel, this feels like something we did to you. And that's not what we want. I don't know.
I that is perfect summation of that show. And I, when I was watching in Marseille, I was thinking, I actually really want it to be more French. I mean, they're all French actors. It's a French production. It's all, you know, I didn't turn any. There is an available, and I saw later on, I think Seppenwall or somebody tweeted out that he was actually watching it in that version where they had the American voiceover.
Oh, they have a dub version.
They have a dubbed version. Huh. And I was like, oh my God, I would never do that. And I watched it in its original, and I wanted it to be more French and less American. Yeah. And, you know, there is some really beautiful shots of overhead shots of Marseille. And I know that the French don't normally or think that, as I said in the review, that's not really the face of France. That's not the city you would put forward.
Sure.
Paris, I guess, is the standard. But
This is like, you know, doing the Wire or Homicide in Baltimore, right?
Exactly. But I still love it. I still think, you know, and I noted in there, I was like, you know, we're New World people. Anything that's shot like I mean, show us your ugly city. Show us your ugliest part of France, and I still think it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's going to be better than the American suburbs, pretty much. So the overhead shots of the water and the port in Marseille, it's beautiful. I loved it. I wanted it to be more of that. Oh, I wanted more French, and it's not.
Yeah, I think, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this stuff, but I get why they didn't want to show it to you, right? It's like, well, it's not really you.
Yeah, I get right away why they didn't want to show it to me.
Because most of the stuff that gets imported for us is stuff that's imported because it's like, oh, the Americans will like this because it's an interesting, you know, from another country spin on this. And, you know, it'll go on cable and or on PBS because there isn't a huge market for out of US and out of North America, especially programming here. But this is different, right? Because it's sort of not made for us.
It really was not directed at us. So not even for us that's like tune in, because it wasn't going to give us the sort of French experience. When I watch a foreign show, I want to know about that country, whether it's Denmark or Spain or Paris in France, whatever.
So in the end, to sum up your review, no.
Yes, it's definitely a no. It's a non-starter, especially if it's a matter of time.
Right.
And we know that it's always a matter of time. Yes.
There are other international TV options on streaming. Well, so what about Houdini and Doyle? This is going on Fox, and Arthur Conan Doyle, you get the little English touch there, and then and then Harry Houdini, the American magician, and it's set in 1901. So what is this? Is this a buddy comedy? Is it a cop, not a cop? I guess they're neither of them are cops, so it can't be that. Magician, not a magician?
Well, they're actually, and they do start solving crimes.
Oh,
so they are with a cop who actually is, and I write in this review, she's a woman who was literally so far ahead of her time that she wouldn't have existed. So basically, she's not a cop, but she's a cop. And then there's two not a cops with her.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
and they're
nice
not
spin.
Really even a thing, because they didn't even meet for another 20 years in real life.
Uh-huh. So it's not a thing.
It's totally, no part of it is a thing.
Now, historical inaccuracy aside, is it any good?
No.
Okay. Well then, so I can't watch it for the history, and I can't watch it for the...
Because the bad part about it is both actors are in different shows. I'm going to mispronounce his name because I'd never say it out loud. It's Stephen Mannion. Is that how you pronounce it? He's the one from he's the British actor who's in Episodes on Showtime. And he's Doyle. And now I can't remember.
We're gonna try to pronounce everything fancy, and because the alternative to everybody out there is that we call him Mangan.
Yeah, Mangan,
and that's
something.
Not it.
Yeah,
so.
It's probably not it. I'm so terrible with that now, and I can't even remember the other guy's name. But he was on Bones for a while. Was it Bones?
No, House. Michael Weston.
House. He was on House. Yeah, and they're in two different shows. So. What's his name? It was Michael
Weston. He was
Weston,
the detective.
Yes. And he's Houdini. He's in a more like lighthearted, funny American rom-com, a buddy film. Mm-hmm. And Stephen Mannion, if that's his name, is actually in a very serious British detective show. And so it's oil and water, and it never seems right. And to me, the whole thing, as I wrote in the story, it seems wonky because it's clearly like they just bought this. Fox just bought this to bridge themselves into the summer. But they didn't really give it very much promotion. It tanked on its first night out. It just seems really weird. It's like, okay, this doesn't seem like a Fox show at all.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you know how this show got on and what it's supposed to do? Because it seems weird that this is a Fox show and it's premiering in May, right at the end of the season. So it's not really summer programming.
I was really trying to put the pieces together, because not only is it not full on summer yet, it's technically, you know, the season's still on. It's just coming in May. If it was in June, I would understand it. I don't know why they did it, but it's also a Canadian British production, which means that it actually aired in Canada and the UK before it aired here. And that'll tell you something.
That's really unusual for a broadcast show.
Right. It's like they just gave up the rights to it. And if you're on Twitter, which I know you are, and follow TV critics, which I know you do, you'll notice that no one in the other countries is pretty much talking about it. Otherwise, we would have seen, hey, have you guys seen Houdini and Doyle?
I would have read you a letter from somebody asking why we haven't covered Houdini and Doyle, in fact.
Exactly. That's probably what – and so this one – so they show it here, but it's from Sony Pictures Television. It's not even from Fox. And the only connection I can make is that David Shore is the only American part of the production. His shingle is part of this deal, and he has a deal with Sony, but maybe Fox still wants to be in business with him because he did House. I don't know.
It sounds like it aired in March in the UK, starting in March, and is airing simultaneously in the US and Canada. So, but yeah, this is, we hear about that on cable sometimes, and that happens, or PBS, but for like a major broadcast network like Fox to run something 2 months after it already ran somewhere else in the world is unusual. So yeah, maybe there's obviously some sort of story there. I'm not opposed to the idea, right, of picking up international productions and international co-productions, especially when it's not sort of like the main part of your season, but this one's a little weird. And it's not good. I mean, that's the other thing, is it's not like it's a find a diamond in the rough or something. It's sort of like, why is this here? And, you know, nobody is going to really want to watch it.
I think putting it on when they did is the mystery. If you put it on in June, I'm like, okay, I don't have any problem buying it, because, you know, a lot of networks will buy Canadian product and stick it on in the summer. You got to keep the lights on.
Thanks, Canada.
Yeah, thanks, Canada. And you never know if one of those shows, generally procedural, will like strike the fancy of somebody sitting at home on the summer with no plans, and they turn the tube on. They turn network television on primarily. They're not streaming and they're not going to cable. And they're like, hey, what do we got? And then, oh, I never heard of this Rookie Blue show. So let's watch that.
Exactly.
That's totally fine. I'm okay with that. But sticking it on Friday, it's like, I mean, on May, and without any promotion, that's the thing that kills me. It's like, what? It was DOA when it came out. So, and not a surprise. So, whatever. The mysteries of the television business.
Remember Due South? Due South was another one of those.
Oh, yeah, Due South.
That was Paul Haggis did that. But that was another one of those weird, Canadian show run in the summertime on CBS. So
I remember fondly, by the way.
Yeah. That was a fun little thing.
There's too much TV on.
Houdini and Doyle, yeah, well, I think that comes down to it, right? This is the sort of thing that you might flip on when there's nothing else on and think, oh, okay, fine. But, you know, there's never nothing else on. Like, there's always something better on.
Always something else. And not to Columbo you early in the show, Dan Feinberg reviewed this show called Flowers. It's a comedy drama. It's on CISO. And I was like, it's on what?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know what that is. What is CISO?
So that's what I thought.
Is that a weird streaming?
It's NBC Universal has their own streaming service, though NBC is a primary buyer and investor in Hulu. And so it's the I got to tell you, so much weird stuff is happening right now. Jason, I can't figure it out. It's like, okay, wait. You have a thing called CISO, even though you're a primary investor in Hulu, and you're allowing CISO to actually be part of the Amazon...
like bundle.
Bundle. Yeah. Like if you pay for the Amazon bundle, you get CISO? What? And separately, it's available on its own for $3.99. And I'm sorry, no. And also, there's like nothing on there. There's nothing you would really want to watch on there, even though, you know... Flowers itself, which has, it's a British thing, it's fully scripted UK dramedy. It's got Olivia Colman, and it's got pretty good reviews. So, but not enough for me to pay $3.99. Sorry,
it's so weird,
right? Isn't that going on? It's like, what? I don't know. And then 4 years after the last Wallander, the next one's on Sunday.
Huh.
I like Wallander, even though it's like he's kind of a wallflower. Wall flounder.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. Okay, I'm gonna give myself a golf clap.
See, there's the regret. The Terrell Owens regret is beginning now.
All right, let's move on.
Have you? I have one news item, which is that I saw an interesting story about how the CBS is negotiating with Warner over their fee for Supergirl. That Les Moonves announced that they were going to renew all their freshman series, but apparently now there's been a hang up. There's a hold up in renewing Supergirl, where CBS is saying that it's a little too expensive given the ratings that it gets. And I'm interested if you have a read on that. It sounds to me like they're threatening to move it to the CW mostly as a negotiating tactic. But that was sort of unexpected news this week, which is funny because of all the Greg Berlanti produced superhero shows that are on, you know, I think it was the one that is showing the most potential right now, because the other ones have sort of had some creative challenges. I don't know.
Well, I don't think that Moonves is going to budge. So if Warner thinks they're going to win over less, forget it. That's not going to happen. And I actually think it would be better if it did move to the CW. I'd be happy with that. Kind of like a in-season trade, end of the season trade.
Yeah. You know, well, I imagine that the fee that they would pay for a CW show is even less than a negotiated down. Because I think I read that they're paying Warner $3 million per episode for Supergirl on CBS, and that's not at all what they pay for shows on CW. And so it might be that this is just like literally, well, you know, you can cut our rate, or we'll take you to this other place, and you're really going to lose money on it.
Yeah, because they don't spend that much money.
It would fit better on CW.
Yeah.
I think it would be a hit on CW. And maybe that's it. Maybe this is, we talked about it when they announced this last year, that maybe the issue here is CBS wanted to try this out,
mm-hmm.
and the ratings were okay, but not huge.
Right.
And so there's a question of like, does CBS want to keep this experiment going at all? Or would it be better off with a lower budget on the CW?
Yeah. And I think you're onto something, and that's, which is funny because that's what we would have said a year ago.
Right. Right. It's just, well, I had a moment, and I don't think this is going to happen, but I had that moment where I'm like, oh, would Les Moonves renew this and put it on CBS All Access? Just a part of his diabolical plan, his 1-2 punch with Star Trek. I don't think so, but you never put it past him.
Never put it past him.
He could, I'm sure he's got evil plans revolving around, that Star Trek show launch.
So, I know
he's a smart guy.
He's the smartest.
He's got his plans. You want to do some letters?
Let's do some letters.
All right. It's kind of a quiet time.
I hate to say it. I'm loving it.
Yeah. It's good.
I'm loving it.
It's good. There's a lot of shows on, but there's not a lot of like new stuff coming. We're just sort of, everything's kind of churning away, which is good, I think.
Oh, you know what? I am going to actually Columbia you.
Oh, okay.
Right here in the middle.
That's the perfect time for it.
Because this does make sense. And you will actually get a secondary level laugh out of it that others will not, which I will not explain to others why you are getting that secondary laugh. But, you know, we've talked here as a breaking news bit, like, oh, God, probably 6 months ago, that I was going to try to bring back the power rankings.
Uh-huh.
And it couldn't, because the life is overwhelming and I just don't see a way to do it. And the powers that be were like, wouldn't it be great if this was back? And I said, look, the only way that it actually could come back, how I would want to do it, is I would want it to be revamped so that I would be able to do like a top, like a power ranking of just dramas, and then a power ranking of just comedies, mm-hmm. and then a power ranking of late night talk shows, and then a power ranking of, you know, whatever. And that, so that it, you
so
don't
like every
have to,
every week you do a new little list.
Right, because then it would take 2 or 3 weeks to come back to the dramas.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have to watch, you wouldn't have to be so invested that week in hours of stuff. Yeah, I thought it was a good idea. And they thought it was a really good idea. And then they said, let's do it. And it went back, and the IT people said, remember that really cool chart that a certain somebody created for you? We don't know how to work with that chart in our new thing where it will work on mobile and platforms.
I was going to say, Tim, do you need me to make you a new chart?
Well, I said to them, I'm like, I could look into this if this is going to be delayed by 5 years because if it's an IT problem like it was last time. And they're like, actually, we would like you to just make it a list.
Just list.
I was like, not as sexy if you don't have the arrow. And like last week and all this other stuff. And then the design people jumped in and said, wait, maybe we can save this and we'll get back to you. Okay, that was 2 weeks ago. So
all right. Oh, that's good. I like the inside baseball here, but that's good. Well, I am sure there is a designer at THR.com who's like, oh, because anybody who is in there is going to be like, oh, yeah, we could totally do that, right? It's just they need to find the time to do it. But
yeah, that's
good. Well, I the backstory here, for those who don't know, is that Tim wanted to do this, and I just basically saved a page out of the Hollywood Reporter's website and edited HTML in there and made some adjustments and stuff to see could I get a table in there, which I could. And then I just sent Tim the HTML and said, just paste this in and change the names, and you've got a chart. And that was how the power rankings were done for
It was about a half hour after, by the way, people were like, this is impossible.
Impossible. Yeah. It took months. We're like, no, we can't do it.
Impossible.
We don't know how to do it.
Just for months on end. Nope. That is not possible. Jason, 29 and a half minutes later here.
if it keeps on being a problem, let me know, because I am pretty sure that I could do something that was more modern and would work with mobile and things like that if it came to that. But I would hope that there's some, you got a fan somewhere inside the THR's design department who's like, oh yeah, we can do that. And they're going to build something great for you. So
yeah, somebody did step in. They did, from online people stepped in and said, oh, we're going to have a compromise that'll make everybody happy. Yeah, so we'll see.
All right. Awesome. Check in and
no
soon.
More pulling the wing.
We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Before we do the letters, I'm going to tell you about a sponsor. How about that?
Woohoo!
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This week's edition of TV Talk Machine is brought to you by The Best of It. The Best of It pulls back the curtain and takes an unflinching look at the life of a professional gambler. This is a character-driven documentary that weaves vintage Las Vegas gambling tales while telling the story of four professional gamblers who all chose to make a living betting on sports. But a feud develops between two of them after accusations are made about gambling debts. A gambler's actual bank account balance is often based on rumor and half-truth. A professional bettor must walk the precarious high-wire act, trying to avoid the inevitable and cliched crash and burn that most of them meet. The Best of It is now playing on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and Vimeo on demand, and you can purchase The Best of It in HD on iTunes, and you'll get special features with the movie, all part of the iTunes Extra package. And on Vimeo on demand, if you use the promo code Goodman, you'll get $2 off your purchase.
Ooh,
you can also
that.
Visit bestofitmovie.com to learn about the characters' backstories, watch the trailer and other videos. There's links to social media and all of the lingo of gambling, so you too can become an inveterate gambler or not. The choice is yours. The Best of It, now playing on digital HD, bestofitmovie.com. Thanks to them.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Surprise.
That is a surprise.
It was not underpants, and it was not shaving.
I know. I was ready to do another shave.
Yeah, but no.
But yeah, that's good.
Just
makes sense.
Place a bet, then.
Yeah, place a bet. I see what you did there.
Dean of the 707 watched the Waltons in Virginia.
Okay. That guy's got to get off the road, man. He's like, he's that REM song. Take a break, Driver 8. You've been out there too long.
Yeah, the Waltons. Was the Waltons actually set in Virginia? I'm concerned now. Yeah, rural Virginia. Okay, good.
Oh, look at you fact-checking the letters as we go.
I had to do that because I was concerned there. Anyway, Earl Hamner, who wrote the Waltons, just died a couple months ago. Dean pointed out, though, he prefers his work on Twilight Zone. He wrote half a dozen episodes of The Twilight Zone, too, before he went and created The Waltons. Good night, John Boy.
Yeah.
Dean, when are you coming home? Let us know. Brandon from the 301 wrote in and said, I was recently thinking, we watch these TV shows, and once we grow to like them, we hope they won't mess up the ending. I was wondering, what shows have had the best endings? I like Buffy's ending, for example, and it made me look fondly back on the whole show, warts and all. What endings have really worked for you? What shows have stuck the landing that you can think of?
Well, I mean, I know it's a divisive, but I love the ending of The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. I really love the ending of Mad Men. Another divisive ending, I'm sure. I love both of those. I think that The Shield was fantastic in its final year, ending that way. I thought that was really, really solid. And I think if you want a more, I don't want to say conventional, but it's. I think it's more pleasing. It's more crowd pleasing ending. I think 6 Feet Under is also a great ending.
That was a great last scene, right?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, I'll throw out a few on the nerdy side. Star Trek: The Next Generation actually had a very nice ending that was it uses sci-fi conceit to sort of go back to the pilot episode as well as sort of into a possible future of the characters, and also took enough time to give everybody sort of one last glimpse of the characters interacting with each other. It was a well-handled ending. I'm glad he mentioned Buffy, because I agree. In fact, I'd say Buffy has had two great endings.
Yeah.
The last episode of season 5 where Buffy dies to save her sister, and if the show had ended there, that would have been a great ending. I think we talked about that last week. But also the last season of Buffy ends with they kind of wrap everything up and most of the town gets sucked into a sinkhole.
Yes.
But the last hellmouth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but the last shot is her looking out and smiling. It's just a really nice way to put a little dot on it. And then I'm gonna be controversial. I don't really love the last season of Lost.
Oh,
but I like the last episode of Lost. And the reason I like it is because I feel like fundamentally, what is the last episode of a TV show? It's you spending your last time with these characters. You're never going to get new stuff with them ever again. You sort of want to see your old friends one last time and say goodbye. And what literally happens in the last 20 minutes of Lost? Mm-hmm. All of our old friends get to see each other one last time. They're together one last time in one room, and then they walk out, and it's the end of the show. It's like literally what every series finale is the end of Lost. That may be too meta for most people who wanted more solutions to secrets and mysteries, but I thought in the end, I thought actually emotionally, this is about as fulfilling as a season finale or a series finale could ever be.
Wow. So, yeah. Okay. I like that. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. If you think of it just in the sense of, what if we got all the characters back together one last time? And they basically wave at the camera and say goodbye, everybody, and then walk out. That's what happens at the end of Lost. Oh, yeah.
Anyway. We just don't know where they are.
No, they're, yeah. Or we do know and we don't like where they are. But either way,
right.
It is. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Hey, Jenny from down the block.
Oh, yeah.
650. Uh-huh. She wrote in to say, I think The Americans is having a very strong season, perhaps the best one yet. It's rare that a show in its fourth season is this good. You had mentioned a while back you thought the show could only go on, or the shows in general, I think we said, should only go on 5 or 6 seasons. But this show is now about a year away from Gorbachev, Glasnost, Perestroika, the fall of the Berlin Wall and the Eastern Bloc, and eventually the collapse of the Soviet Union. With writers this exceptional and these events providing fresh storylines, couldn't the show stay good for a number of additional seasons? Do you still think the show should wrap up in maybe a season or two? What do you think about the future of The Americans?
I think there's ways to achieve both. I do think that the writers are trying to do the 2-season wrap. They're looking ahead, and all indications are they're going to go that way. They did a time jump in the last episode, so I think that I wouldn't rule out another time jump, getting a little bit closer to that.
Sort of like with Mad Men, right? Yeah, just push the show forward. You don't have to go 1 year to 1 year to get into the dissolution of the Soviet Union, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can open up a season, right where we're talking. That is, for Jenny's got a good idea, and I think that's a possibility. I don't know if that's what they're thinking.
Wouldn't that be a wonderful end to that show, to have it be like they're essentially cut off and told, go live your life where your bosses are gone. It's all gone. Or alternately, there's a new boss now, right? Now we're not the KGB anymore. We're something else, but we're still, I don't know. That's the beauty of setting that show when they did, right? Is that there is that inherent mystery from the very beginning of like, how's it going to work out? Cause we know what happens.
And I think that they have, I think that they know where they're going and they've talked this already out. I'm sure that they've probably considered this. I don't know whether they're going to go in that direction or not, but I think they've considered it. And I think that, AMC is with them to the end, no matter what. In fact, I'm writing something next week because this last episode was great and this whole season has been fantastic, where I think it's time for the Emmy people to sort of like say, this is your chance to make good.
Right.
So that's my thing.
I've got another Americans letter, actually, from Tom from the 408. So another Bay Arean.
Yeah.
He says, now that The Americans is over halfway through its fourth season, where do you think it's going to stack up in the pantheon of other great series? So where in the Hall of Fame do you think The Americans is going to land?
Well, I think this goes back to questions about how, sticking the landing and the ending. I think we're going to need to see that first, because I don't think you can tell. I think if you asked everybody who was a critic and was, you know, on board and had been on board from the time of The Wire at the end of season four, they would have said, it's going to be in the Hall of Fame, but I think they would have been like universal 100%. Yeah. And then after season five, I think a lot of people doubted like that it was a good season, and it tarnished where to put it for some people, not everybody, but you broke up the unanimous part of it. So I think that we're going to have to wait and see on The Americans. It's certainly, to me, a candidate to be – it is to me, it's the best current candidate to make it into the – to fight into the top five. And that's a pretty crowded field right now. Right. So I think we're going to be expanding. I think those slots are kind of almost taken, and now we're moving towards the second half of the top 10. So that's what I'm thinking.
Well, that's all we can say at this point, but I think that's big, that it's got a chance to be in the pantheon.
I think it does.
On the first ballot, so that's good. So Nicholas in the 601, which he says is Central Mississippi.
Okay.
He wrote in to point something out that I also noticed last week. So I mentioned last week that The Masked Scheduler wrote a piece that made me laugh about how you never know with testing shows. He posted something early this week about setting the schedule and pilot testing. And it included a slide from, I think, NBC. It might have been Fox, but I think, you know, it was at NBC. That was requested by old Don Olmeyer about... he says research homilies. These are like learned things from programmers. Now, apparently Don Olmeyer then passed these slides out to like the creators of the shows, and they felt like NBC was basically telling them to paint by numbers in order to get their show on the network, which is not what they intended. Anyway, it's a good story, and I'll link to it in the show notes. But Nicholas in the 601 mentioned it because this is something that's literally in there. Okay. For procedurals, we have found the core elements are, bullet point, two leads with a pinch of sexual tension. Bullet point, one lead, a cop, FBI, CIA, whatever. Bullet point, the other lead has a superpower used to solve crimes. Yes, cop, not a cop is in the slideshow. We think cop, not a cop works really well for procedurals. There you go. You can't argue with that.
Nope, that's how it all started.
Although they say technically it could also be cop, magic cop, Nicholas says. Sure, you do that. But yeah, cop, not a cop. One lead a cop.
Magical cop.
The other lead has a superpower. Well, like Bones is literally that show, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Cop, not a cop. It's in there. Don Olmeyer passed it out and everybody else in Hollywood said, hey, cop, not a cop. That's a good idea. All right. Let's move to Alan in the 660.
Okay, 660.
It was interesting to hear last week that the head of Showtime is particularly hands-on in terms of giving notes. I wonder if this is why The Affair evolved from a subtle and sophisticated drama to a lurid, trashy potboiler.
No, I don't think.
Shots fired.
I don't think anybody could save that show, but I was never on board. So that was, I think he probably did his best. You know, he's not going to complain about the ratings for that show, which are pretty good. I think that the critical take has, I was never on board, but there were a lot of people who were, and then they sort of splintered slowly. And now I don't, they could be all Martians at this point. I'm not going to watch it.
I got one here from Scott in the 202. I'm going to read some of it. It's a very long letter, but there's a key point that I want to bring out here. He says, I just listened to episode 80 and wanted to partly defend myself from being one of those uninformed listeners who gave you incorrect facts. I wrote to you a few weeks ago about the powers that be. I know you have to edit letters in order to read them on the podcast, but in my defense, I wrote that the series barely lasted through the season, indicating that it did have one complete season. I based that on a Google search that showed it had a total of 21 episodes and ran from 1992 to 1993. Like any good fan of television, I assumed this was one full season from September 1992 to May 1993. However, what I got wrong, was that it premiered in March 1992 and ran only 8 episodes. Then it returned in November 1992 for another 13 episodes. So technically I was wrong. Yes, technically you were wrong, Scott. But the spirit of what I wrote is sort of correct. Nope.
I kind of like his spirit. I like the spirit of total episode numbers equaling one season when it was really 2.
I'm truly sorry for giving you only partial facts. This time I checked thoroughly. No snickering, Tim. Thank you.
Oh, I was supporting him, not snickering.
Yeah, I know. He assumed that you were going to be laughing at him. No, I'm going to... Scott, I appreciate the part of your apology that you gave. the other part I don't necessarily appreciate. And then he says something nice to wrap it up, which is, how is it that even your Harry's or underwear ads are as entertaining as the rest of the show? Most podcast commercials are so boring, I skip them, but I crack up every time Jason talks about the razor blades trapped in the lock case and how much he hates dealing with sales clerks. I found, Scott, and this is a little inside baseball for reading podcast ads, that playing up my misanthropy works great for ads. So,
yes.
You know, it's there anyway. I really don't want to deal with people in the world.
Me too.
And clicking buttons on a computer on the internet to get things shipped to my house in a box by somebody who leaves it at the front door without even talking to me, that's heaven.
Dream scenario. Yes. So, no interaction with another human.
So, yeah.
It's your dream, dream world.
Yep. Just leave
that
it outside
so
the door,
sad.
People.
It was sad. Don't even knock.
Yep.
Just
nope.
Leave it.
Okay, we got some quick hits from Twitter and then we'll be done. Indy Sarah, our buddy, she sent us 2 tweets with love from the 317. First is, what do you think is the most visually appealing show currently on the air? Visually appealing. I think there's only one answer here, but I'm curious to what you say.
Currently on the air.
Well, you know, visually, introduction, yeah.
I'm going to say, okay, hold on. I'm trying
to get your visual studies. Crank up the visual studies thing, right?
I had certainly those. I mean, I would say those, but it's currently in production. Like, it's got to be on the air right now.
Well, I don't think so. I think, like, you know, they're making it.
Oh, they're making it. Oh,
it
okay.
Have to be like right in on May 6th.
Oh, I would say the two that I just taught were Mr. Robot and Fargo. I think those are spot on.
Yep.
I was like
say
Game
Mr. Robot.
Too.
Yeah, Game of Thrones that doesn't even look like TV, right? It looks like a movie.
It looks like a movie. So those three are, I would put those up there. But
I think
also like Sense8.
Oh, yeah, Sense8 really is. That's
it's
true.
Beautiful.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Robot gets my vote. Mr. Robot is like nothing else.
It's, nothing else, yeah.
Yeah.
So
distinctive.
Yeah, you can totally geek out on the composition of that. It's like, wow, okay.
And since Mother's Day is coming up, she says... what are your favorite TV moms?
Oh, God, hands down, Lucille Bluth.
Ah, there you go. Lucille Bluth. I kind of can't argue with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got also like Marge Simpson.
Sure.
Right? She's pretty sweet.
Sure. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah. Put her in there.
Yeah.
She's in the Mom Hall of Fame now, TV Mom.
That'd
Hall
be
of
pretty
Fame.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. Everyday Scott on Twitter didn't leave an area code, but it's Twitter. It's short. And he just wrote in because I was talking about like my to-do list of shows to watch, which totally works, by the way. And he just wrote in to say there's an iOS app called iShows, which is, which he says he's been, using to keep track of TV. It's like a searchable database of shows that are on and you can like favorite the ones you want to watch. So thanks for that, Scott.
That's very good.
Yeah. And then
good.
And then finally, were you Columboing me or
no, I wasn't. I was actually assisting.
Ah.
Not Columboing. There's a difference. There's a difference.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Whoa.
Okay, here's the last one. Listener Phil wrote in again via Twitter, so we don't have an area code, but
okay.
He says, I loved your comment that Game of Thrones could have had an entire episode of them finding Daenerys's dropped ring out in the grass. He said, a whole episode to find the ring. Didn't that take 3 full movies for Lord of the Rings?
You got us. That's true. And I love those, though. I'm glad they took 3 episodes to find the ring. I mean, I don't know about the Hobbit versions, but
no.
I still watched all 3 of those, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, when I said I was assisting you, do you want to know why?
Yeah, tell me.
I found a tweet on Twitter from Graham in the Plus 61.
Is this the one that sent it to us instead of to the TVTM and did a little hashtag? No? Okay, tell me what Graham said.
It said, it's us and hashtag TVTM.
Yeah,
it
that's the one.
Oh, The Good Wife ends. Were you about to say that?
No, go ahead.
Okay, The Good Wife ends seven great seasons. Sorry. I choked on the great part.
Yeah.
Sorry, Graham. Let me check. Boy, okay. All right, look, let me read that again. The Good Wife ends seven great seasons.
Wow.
What other long-running broadcast shows delivered great TV? Well, I'm sorry, I even read this because they were not great seasons, Graham. In the Plus 61, they were good seasons. They were, at times, very good seasons. Never once were they great.
Mm.
I'm just going to let that happen to you.
Ouch.
Ooh, Graham and I, and where is the Plus 61? Because I need...
I think that's Australia, right?
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't know what's going on out there. Maybe he had a walkabout, got sunburned.
Interesting.
No, I was clearly not.
Bitten by a poisonous snake.
Yep, that was a troubling. The Good Wife, I think it was a good show. And I've said that many times. And it was partially very good, and then it got, in this season, not very good.
So what do you think about, like, can you think of a long-running broadcast show that kept the quality pretty high at the end?
Yes.
Yep.
West Wing.
Yeah.
And also Friday Night Lights.
Oh yeah,
except
that's
for season two.
That's a good one. Although it's sort of don't watch season two.
Except for
season
two.
Don't watch those. You know, there's like the middle seasons of The West Wing where it kind of went off the rails, and then it kind of came back on the rails.
Yeah,
And well, Friday Night Lights ended up on like DirecTV, but it was also on NBC. It was also being aired on NBC.
It was a shared thing.
Yeah,
but that's why we always talk about the difference between network television and cable television and streaming thing. I just don't think that they're set up to have greatness.
Yeah.
Because they're built to run forever and they turn over their writing staffs, and you can't do 22 episodes every year and be great. It's impossible.
Yeah.
I don't think that in the history of TV there's been a show that didn't go off the rails at some point. And those are the two. Friday Night Lights, season two, off the rails, and as you said, West Wing, a couple in the middle. But those are to me the two current examples, unless you went back to something like Homicide, and NYPD Blue. Those are the other ones that qualify, but they had weak seasons too. So, those are your Hall of Fame network shows. So I don't think you can get better than that.
It's tough. It's that old Simpsons joke, which is, we'll keep on doing this until the show becomes unprofitable. Like network TV, that's basically it. Like if it becomes a money machine, they will try to extend it as long as possible.
Yeah. It's coming back. No doubt.
Yeah. Right. But thanks, Graham, for that. And thanks, Tim, for finding it. Cause he gave us the hashtag TVTM. Instead of directing it to, at TVTM.
At TVTM.
So
right.
I did see him send that, but it didn't make it into my little list. So I'm glad you saved Graham's question there.
Well, I'm just saying it. He had a walkabout. He got a sunburn, and he's not thinking right.
Yep. Poisonous drop bear got him.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's my favorite story of all that. Oh, my God. Now we got me back on Australia and how I can never visit there. Yeah. Oh, my God. And the drop bear is the greatest story in the history of dangerous animals. The drop bear.
Yeah, just look it up, people.
I just want to have a whole drop bear podcast.
Wow.
You know what? That would be a great band name, too. The Drop Bears.
It probably is one, right?
It probably is. Oh, I don't know. Why did you do this to me so late in the podcast? Tim, you drop-bared me. Tim, that's what you did.
Tim, the Drop Bears were a popular part of the Australian music scene in the early 1980s. They had a couple of national chart hits and received national airplay. They had a minor charting hit with Shall We Go in 1985.
Oh, my God. Oh, now I'm down the rabbit hole. I can't believe you. This is you Columbo'd me, but you drop-bared me.
I did.
Wow. Oh, my God.
I just came right out of the tree.
That is the scariest
eucalyptus
effing animal. See, I didn't even make you check the box.
Nope.
But boy, that whole concept of that thing is just scary.
Well, let me give the numbers. You can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can post on our Facebook group. We're at facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. You can tweet to us @TVTM, better than #TVTM. And of course, you can tweet us directly, which Graham did. I'm @JaySnell, and Tim is @BastardMachine on Twitter. And that's 81. We are still standing at the center of the star circle.
Yes.
In the middle of Cowboy Stadium.
Hands extended.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's right. They're booing us.
They're
but you know what? They're going to sign us later as a free agent.
They are. And we're going to drop a bunch of bears on them.
Oh, no. All right. Have a good weekend, Tim. We'll talk next week.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.